mothers.
And others.
Somewhere in the music industry between sex, drugs and rock and roll and the Wiggles is the rest of us. Music, Mothers and Others is an audio parents group about popular music. A chance to discuss how parenting fits or doesn't into music industry life. During the series, we'll talk to people from across the industry. Artists, promoters, techs, broadcasters, writers, academics, teachers, anyone who has a gig in industry, whatever that means. Your hosts are Liz.
Hello.
And Shelley. Hi, that's me. And we are industry veterans, academics and parents, as well as members of the broader village.
Today, our Music Mothers and Others guest is Don Spencer. Don is really the man for children's music in Australia, the founder of the Australian Children's Music Foundation, the voice and face of many soundtracks for generations, including original work, plus many a nursery rhyme via years on Play School. We're so thrilled to have him, an absolute national treasure, Order of Australia recipient, Don Spencer. Welcome. Thank you for joining us. Don, if you don't mind us asking, we normally start by asking what somebody's connection to kids' music is. But given you're so well known for kids' music in Australia, would you mind giving us a bit of a background of your time before kids' music? And I see on your website there's even a bit of a Rolling Stones brag there. Could you tell us a little bit about your life beforehand? Is that okay?
Oh, before children's music. Oh, yeah. Well, I've always had both sides working at the same time. Started off with the Fireball, a nice hit for me in England. And that started me in the pop music industry. And I think my first tour, I was with the Rolling Stones. I toured with the Stones several times, did about 48 concerts, I think, all in all. In the early days, and was lucky enough to work with just about every major solo and group in England at the time, and Europe, and I worked in America as well. So I was very lucky, I think, because I stumbled into it. I didn't ever start out to be a singer-songwriter as such. I just, in my travels, I was hitchhiking around the world for about 4 years when I left, just after I left school. So I ran into a guy who played guitar, and I went, that's cool. So I taught the guitar. I taught myself the guitar, and he was a songwriter, a guy called Roger Whittaker, who became very famous. But we were just young guys. Read a few songs and thought, that's it, we'll see what happens. And I went to Canada with my brother at the time, and we were there. And suddenly I wrote back and said, anything happened to those songs I wrote? Thinking, that's all right. And they said, yeah, you're in the hit parade, get back here. So it was before the days of mobile phones and internet. So I had to fly back to England, and they put me into a blue mohair suit overnight, and I was on doing a tour. Pop tour with all these great pop singers and pop groups. And there was, I didn't know what I was doing, by the way. I didn't have a clue, but I just stumbled my way through, and I'm still stumbling my way through.
Oh, you sound terribly modest.
That was a long time ago. But I was lucky. I did a lot of acting as well, and I did a movie with Barry Humphries and a few things like that. But at the same time, I was always interested in doing children's television and children's music. It was always, I guess, due to my background, I always wanted to do what I could for kids.
Do you mind telling me a bit about that background? What is it that put that interest in for you?
Well, I don't kind of make it a big deal, but I had a pretty challenging childhood. I grew up in the bush, but my mother brought myself and my brother and sister up on her own, and it was pretty tough, lots of little things that happen when you're a child that you don't quite cope with. And my escape was always listening to music. And when I got into the music business, I thought there must be kids out there like me who found the comfort, you know, the great solace what music can give to you when you're feeling in a bad place, you know. So that's kind of the fundamental reason why I even started the foundation, was to, I just knew how music can help kids' mental well-being. That was the first thing I had in my mind, that there'd be kids out there like me who might find music this great comfort.
Amazing.
And was there a song in particular that was influential to you when you were a child? Was there something that really stood out that was important and meaningful for you?
You know, funnily enough, the music I listened to mostly when I was a child was classical music, because that's kind of what was in the house. We had an old pianola, and we had Tchaikovsky and operas and the easier accessible classical music. I mean, I did have pop singers I liked at the time, but nobody will remember them. But the Kingston Trio and people like that that nobody remembers.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because for a long time, particularly in pop music, people think that, you know, young people are vulnerable and that pop music might hurt them. You know, particularly when it came at that time of the Stones, there was that hysteria that young people might be
like the devil's music. You know, it's gonna be, they're gonna be turned to the dark side or gonna be, you know, the unruliness.
Well, I would, I wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, I find some music of today and some of the music, even the way sometimes the Rolling Stones behaved, it wasn't probably great role model stuff. But and right now, there's a lot of music out there that I find, you know, a bit offensive at times, but hopefully not in children's music. So, you know, the kids are obviously influenced by it. I can't say that all music's all good for kids, or because some probably is on the dark side. But
well, these days, I mean, kids can encounter music in so many different ways. Like they can hear their parents, you know, got the radio station on, or they grab the YouTube and look at the playlist from their parents, or, you know, they can go out in a shopping mall and they can hear music. There's so many different opportunities for kids to encounter music that it's not just a very concentrated sit down and I'm going to play this LP that we'll put on the record from start to finish. We'll listen to a whole album. It's really coming at them from different ways, which I suppose is quite different to how perhaps you were brought up as a child.
Absolutely. We didn't have that wall-to-wall music that you're talking about now, that it's everywhere. And, you know, you get into an elevator or a lift and, yeah, there's music and, you know, elevator music. But it is different now. And, well, there's a lot of things they will say in music now that we would never dream of saying before. Like they do in movies, you know, they put stuff in movies. We used to go, oh, you have to imagine that. Probably better we do imagine it. I'm only speaking for myself here.
Yeah.
That's all right. Don, you did so much work with music on television too. And, you know, I mean, obviously there's Play School, but as you say, you've had lots of different presenting roles. Was there something about that sound and vision that you found really appealed to you, doing both, you know, addressing kids in both ways?
I talk to children exactly the way I talk to everyone. I never talked down to them. I never, when I did Play School and had a lot of other shows for children, particularly in England. I also did Kindergarten of the Air here in Australia.
Yeah.
But I never talked any differently to a child. I say, hey, hi, this is what this is that, why it is, and do you want to try this song? I never go, hey, do you want to try this song? You know, I never patronize them. I just, and they like that. That's how it works. You just talk to them like they're normal, you know. Growing up, I don't mean normal. I mean growing up.
No, I know. Well, we've got little kids ourselves. They're not always normal, we know.
Yeah.
It's so interesting too, because I sort of think about the era after yours, when we kind of get into what I'll call the, well, not after yours, but, you know, the Wiggles era, when all of a sudden it's as if children's music hadn't happened before. And that difference that, you know, people were making a big deal about them being, you know, male role models for kids. But you were such an important male role model in my own childhood too. You know, I remember, you know, because when you're at school, you're often surrounded by women in primary school and women in, you know, in caring roles. But
it's
it was
true.
Really important to have a man leading. Did you ever feel that responsibility to be a man, to be a bit of a musical dad to people?
I never thought in terms of being a musical dad or putting any, whether it's male or female. I don't know. I was just so happy that I connected with children, and I always have. It's been just like one of the lovely things about my life. Even if it's not just because they know me, I just like, I get along with kids, you know. And I deliberately wrote a lot of that music because I'd been overseas. I was born in Australia, of course, and went overseas after I did my national service. So when I came back to live in Australia, I visited, came back for short visits and do some TV. But when I came back to live and I'd resumed Play School and things, I realized there just were not enough songs about Australia for children. And that's why I wrote Feathers, Fur or Fins, and then about 16 albums later, writing all about all the animals, because I wanted the kids to be aware of what we have in Australia and in a way educate them about what the animals are. So all the songs had truth in them, but I tried to make it entertaining. So I didn't set out with some great philosophy so much as that I figured we didn't have enough music for children about our own country. We're still singing all songs from everywhere else. You go to any school, any choir, any, they're always singing some song that came from somewhere else. There's nothing wrong with singing some songs, but it'd be nice to have our own. So that was what I wanted to do. And I last year wrote the anthem for Children of Australia anthem, which I don't know if you've heard yet, but we'd be played a lot more this year. But I'm just really grateful that the kids and the parents related to it and blessed, because there's not a week goes by I don't get a message from somebody saying, I grew up with you, or I did. Then now they're saying my grandkids are now listening to it. And I go, oh, that'll be right.
I love that. It just shows you how you've resonated with Australian audiences, you know, Australian kids. You really thought about what kids might want to listen to, and that is the sounds of their country and the sounds of the world around them, rather than replicating music that's from England or from the United States or something. These are songs that strike a chord with the environment that these kids and adults and grandkids live in.
Yeah, well, as I said, I'm just glad that did happen, because that was what I was trying to do, is to just say, let's sing about our country instead of always something else. I'm Don Spencer, and you are listening to Music, Mothers and Others. I'm one of the others.
The musical legacy that you have is obviously carried on through your daughter, Danielle Spencer, and the great music that she makes.
I don't know how many other generations you might put out of. Her kids are probably a bit young to be considering music just yet, but are those conversations you have kind of at home? Did you ever sort of encourage her and them one way or another, or how did you feel about the music industry and that relationship?
Well, the music business, I've got a saying, I love the music, I'm not crazy about the business. But the music it was a big part of Danielle's life because of what I do. So I taught her piano, I taught my son the guitar, but I never actually said, oh, you got to be a singer or got to be a... It was just, you know, be what you want to be. It was never pushing them that way. But Danielle just happens to have a beautiful voice.
Absolutely.
I wish I could borrow it now and again. It's a beautiful voice. And writes very, very clever, interesting songs. So I'm very proud of her. She's a wonderful, wonderful performer.
Absolutely.
I kind of want to know what songs you would sing to the kids when they were going to sleep at night. I mean, were you singing songs from your albums, or you're making up nonsense lullabies?
I didn't inflict myself on them too much, don't worry. I did sing to them, that's for sure. But I read to them a lot. You know, I was reading and really encouraged their imagination more than it. So it had a limit on how much television they could watch. And it's important we use our imaginations. And if everything's visual, that cuts out a lot of the imaginative process. So we just had a lot of fun with music. It wasn't always my music. It was whatever, you know. If they'd liked a song, I'd learn it and play it, you know. And so somebody else's song, didn't matter, pop song. And she's got perfect pitch, which I don't have. You know, she's lucky. She's got perfect pitch. Beautiful.
Wow. She is gorgeous.
I can talk about my daughter all day if you like.
Maybe we need to have her as a guest, Liz, on the show.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
That's one of my favourite things, is performing with her, because we've done a lot of concerts together and stuff. So that's great.
Did you find when you were working and she was growing up, and please tell us if we're being intrusive, please tell us and we'll stop, but how did you negotiate a career and parenthood? Did you ever find it, the juggle, difficult?
You know, I didn't. I used to do a lot of tours, but once my son was born, I never did any more pop tours. I was lucky. I was making a good living as a songwriter and as a solo performer a lot of television in England. I had a television series about seven or eight years on Tyne Tees and Anglia and the BBC. I was always doing a TV thing. So that didn't take me, I'd only go away from home for a day sometimes, or when I was working for the BBC, we were all living in London. I'd just go in the morning and be back at night. So I was lucky. I could take my kids to school and watch all their sport, and I could write my songs when I felt like it. So I don't think they knew I worked till they were about 10.
Well, this is the thing about the music, you know, business or the music industry, is that Liz and I, the guests that we've spoken to, have indicated that it's not a particularly family-friendly industry to be in, because of the constant touring or the unfriendly hours of doing shows and things like that. And
absolutely.
So maybe putting on your Australian music, Australian Children's Music Foundation hat, if you had any recommendations to make for changes in the industry so that it could be a bit more parent-friendly or a kid-friendly space, what might they be?
It's a it's a tough industry if you're a singer or an actor, because it does often take you away, or particularly actors, and that have to go on location for months at a time sometimes, or a lot longer. So I was particularly lucky that I was able to do what I did, but I certainly, a lot of my friends just have to battle with that, you know. And I've got, like a lot of people, I've got a lot of friends who are not still in a relationship, or they're divorced and they're trying to juggle being a mother or a father and still perform. It's very complicated and very difficult unless you've got a couple of great sisters or brothers or grandmother and grandfather around. But people who don't have that support, it's very difficult. I can understand it's a huge problem, but I can't solve it.
No.
I wish I could. But you know, it's just supply and demand. If they want you and you've got to make a living, they want you in LA, you've got to go. That's it, you know.
Yeah.
They have to do. But nobody's calling me from LA at the moment, so I'm fine.
Well, there's one upside to this horrible virus, hey? Everybody can stay home.
You can stay home, yeah. Well, I'm used to staying home. I'm a homebody, that's for sure.
What should we tell people listening about the foundation? What do they need to know?
Look, I started the foundation because I know the power of music. But what it really is that children who study music, it obviously enhances their creativity and imagination. It's a great discipline. It's joyful. You know, everybody loves to sing and or play. And after I started the foundation, I began to get a lot more information about what music does. So I started it in a reasonably naive way of thinking music is good for kids, good for their mental well-being, and it's fun, and it'll give them an escape if they're unhappy, etc. That still applies, and now with the virus and the bushfires and the drought, there are so many kids around Australia who are in desperate need of some mental health help. Now we do know categorically that music is great for literacy and numeracy. They teach my music, well, they were teaching my music for many years, Peking University of all places, and Miami, because the content of the songs, but also just as a way of teaching literacy.
Mm-hmm.
And music has got so many other advantages. It's one thing that uses the whole brain. It's one of the few things in the world where the whole brain is involved if you're playing a musical instrument or you're singing and you're into it. It crosses all barriers. There's no racial things. If you're in a group, you don't think about who's this and who's that. You don't give those things a thought in that respect. It is a great way. And the other point that I didn't know it when I started was that they now say that children who study music at a young age are up to 30%, 35% better academically at all subjects, not just mathematics, but people always refer to maths, but in all subjects, they can be up to 30% better than people who don't study music. Now, in countries like Finland, which is music is compulsory in all schools and very extensive music education, they are developing the most incredibly clever people, and they are so far ahead of us in terms of their rating in overall education than we are. And Canada's coming second in the world because they also have music in. But the countries like ours, where up to 70% of public schools in Australia do not have permanent music, they might have a little bit here, a little bit there. But the idea of the foundation for me was, when I started it, I don't do workshops. I said, well, I'm only going to do this. We provide the instruments, we provide the teachers. We're a charity, of course, in case people didn't understand that. So it's a battle to keep getting the money. We provide the teachers and the instruments, and it's permanent teaching in the school curriculum during school hours, and it's got to be regarded as important as any other subject. That's what we do, and we do it. We've been in some schools for 10 years now. We were in schools for 5, 6, as long as we can keep going. But then when we had the terrible bushfires, for instance, in Melbourne, 2009, that's where the mental health side of it came out, because I went down there, and through the help of school children raising money and Rotary, we worked in every one of those schools that were affected by the bushfires for 3 years. And the results were just wonderful, how they could work their way through the trauma. And not just the kids, the teachers and their parents, because that was a particularly horrendous bushfire, as you know, and the death toll was frightening. So that categorically gave me more energy to keep working it, getting into more and more schools to help more and more kids. And it's a joy. And we've had some wonderful successes. You know, one of the poorest schools was on the lowest socioeconomic, mainly Indigenous and Islander kids, and the lowest level academically and the lowest socioeconomic. And the year before last, they got in the top five in the NAPLAN results with private schools and selective high schools. So it was like incredible. Nobody could believe it, but that's what happens.
How rewarding to think that the program is achieving those kinds of tangible results.
Yeah, it is. It is rewarding, you know. And if I can just say one other quick example, we also went to a school once that had 40 nationalities and it was all gangs. And they had a fatal stabbing in the school before we started. And I went and said, can we do a music program? Within 3 years, we had the music captain and vice captain were from the music program. There were no more gangs. They were all singing. And they won a New South Wales Education Award for their achievements academically. So that's what keeps you going. It's one wonderful. Of those things that sort of taken over what I do. The results just keep me going.
It's wonderful. And we will refer to your website, of course. Is that the best way for people to follow up and contribute, donate? How do people help you?
If they just check the website, just www.acmf for Australian Children's Music Foundation.com.au.
Hi, I'm Paul.
I'm Steph.
We're from Something for Kate.
And you're listening to Music Mothers and Others.
Don Spencer, at this point in the show, we like to ask our guests what they are listening to with the kids around them. So this could be a song that you're playing to the grandkids or the neighbours or some kids that pop by your house or something like that, because we're really interested to hear how adults can influence children's tastes in music or at least introduce them to new musical works or works from an adult's own childhood that they think kids really should know about. So could you perhaps finish the sentence for us? The kids and I are listening to.
I'm listening to Frank Sinatra at the moment. That's way back. I'm not listening to this. I guess when I'm relaxing, I tend to listen to Latin American music or Stan Getz or a great piano player, Bill Evans. He's one of the greatest piano players ever. It's just beautiful, relaxing jazz piano. Every now and again, I hear a song I like, but I can't think of one at the moment.
That's the end of another episode of Music Mothers and Others with our very special guest, Don Spencer. Thanks, Don. Music Mothers and Others is a show written and produced by Liz Dufresne and Shelley Brunt. We're broadcast on Sydney's 2SER on 107.3 FM, and we are also a podcast. Find our episodes on all your usual services, such as Apple and Spotify, or our website, musicmothersandothers.com. We'd love you to leave a review. It would make it easier for other people to find us. Feel like getting in touch? Want to know who our next guests are? Visit us on Facebook and Instagram and leave us a message. See you next time.